Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I am so excited to interview an internationally renowned world expert in injectables, Dr. Stephen Harris, all the way from London and the Harris Clinic. So welcome, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
No, my pleasure, of course. So I've been following you on Instagram. I found you on Instagram, of course. It's the big.
I follow you too.
Oh, thank you. And over this last year, I've just been so fascinated with your techniques and your theories on myomodulation. For our audience who doesn't know you, can you give us a little background about what you've studied and how you came into this field?
Yes, well, I'm actually originally South African, and that's when I completed medical school, and then I came to England and became a GP, a general practitioner. And then in 2004, many years ago, I moved into aesthetic practice. And for the last, I would say, 15 years or so, I've been doing this full time. So this is the main thing that I do, which is really injectables involving Botox and fillers. So that's a little bit of background.
And so you've been doing this for 15 to 17 years, I was reading. And yeah. You are well known for your theories of facial reshaping with myomodulation, as well as doing non-surgical lip lifts. So I think myomodulation is very interesting and very controversial. So can you tell us a little bit?
Yes, I think that? So myomodulation is the change in muscle activity when a filler is put next to it, basically. And so in the face, we have elevator muscles, which basically lift, and their counterparts, which are depressors, which depress, and the two are caught up in a tug of war. And so I found that when you put a filler in a certain position or a certain way, that it changes that activity, so you can encourage movement towards reshaping the face, which changes over time. Over time, we lose the shape of the face, and the facial skeleton collapses inward, and this is a way of rotating it outward while also bringing about a change in emotional appearance. In other words, you not only look better physically, but emotionally as well. You look more refreshed. And so the my theory or my hypothesis is that the way it works is through stimulation of sensory receptors called mechanoreceptors, which have been discovered in the facial muscles. And these have connections to the autonomic nervous system, which is the kind of fight and flight, rest and digest system. And it takes you from this kind of sympathetic fight or flight mode and puts you in a more restful state. And so that's why patients will often look very rested after a procedure. I call it a parasympathetic look. And so it gives us a clearer understanding of what is going on there with myomodulation.
It's a very interesting theory, and I definitely think that people look more refreshed and relaxed and happier after filler, but it's so difficult to quantify. Like, how would you convince a practitioner who's been injecting for many, many years that this is something they need to incorporate
into their practice? So that's a good point. And you might also say that the patient just looks sort of more relaxed and more refreshed because they also know they've just had a procedure and they're feeling better.
Yeah.
And so, but what you notice is also is that when filler is injected in a particular way, when you have this kind of overfilled syndrome, it can actually do the opposite, so that the emotional expression is not as fresh, so that it can change things. So what I would say is, if you get this kind of result, this kind of emotional change when you work along with the process of myomodulation rather than just using fillers as filling agents. So I refer to fillers as myomodulators. And in other words, it's not just about sort of filling in the gaps, but it's about reshaping and bringing about emotional beauty, which is something we don't really pay enough attention to. I think we're very focused on a formulaic approach, you know, and filling lost fat in the midface and that kind of thing. And we've lost sight of, shall we say, the artistic side of things.
Okay, so let's say you have the average 40-year-old woman who's feeling kind of tired and haggard, and you need to myomodulate her face. How many average syringes would you end up using in that person?
Okay, firstly, I love that expression, myomodulate her face, because that's exactly what is involved with facial reshaping. And if you look at the face, let's say, as a house, and the patient comes in and they want to, let's say, you know, restore their lips, which is change the door. The idea is to ensure that the house is in order and structurally strong before you make any changes to the door, if that makes any sense. And so if you fix the facial shape as such initially, then what happens is a lot of the areas will correct through a process of indirect beautification, and then nothing stands out. Everything blends in and flows, and the whole process may only require two or three fillers to complete.
Do you have a favorite family of fillers? At the risk of not offending any filler companies and being completely non-biased, do you have a favorite?
You know, I think any reputable filler is good. I just happen to use Juvederm, and I use only two types of filler, which is Juvederm Voluma and Juvederm Ultra 3. So one which is a high viscosity, high cohesivity one for structurally rebuilding the shape of the face, and then one which is a slightly low viscosity, Juvederm Ultra 3, which would go into more delicate areas like the lips. But you know, I think at the end of the day, it's more down to technique and who's behind the filler, as long as it's a reputable one, the filler that is, that makes all the difference, rather than the filler itself.
What is Juvederm Ultra 3 in the United States? Would that be similar probably to our thinnest version of Juvederm, Juvederm Ultra?
I think, or more Ultra yes, Plus? Yes. Juvederm Ultra 3 is Juvederm Ultra.
Ultra, okay.
But I know that you guys tend to use a lot more Restylane, I think, than we do. Do you use?
I use all the fillers. I'm like you. I feel like fillers help me be a good artist, so I want them all in my palette. But I do love Restylane, which is thin. It's similar, I would say, to the Juvederm Ultra. And, right. You know, fuller lips are popular in Los Angeles, so we use some Ultra Plus, of course, as well. It's very different with the British ladies and the... Well, maybe it's not so different. Actually, a lot of the British Instagrams have very big lips, I've noticed.
And they do. It's not something I subscribe to or encourage, especially if they're looking unnatural. I know it's the in thing in some quarters, but it's not something I practice or advocate.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of filler migration occurring now that there have been inexperienced injectors without good qualifications all over the planet, but particularly in England, I would say?
Well, I think there have been, as I'm sure you know, there have been MRI studies to show that filler does migrate over time in areas where we don't even expect it to. But with respect to the lips, I think it's discussed most often. And I think that is a lot down to technique, or more down to that than anything else. And the problem there is that the filler is injected in the border, and a lot of it is put in there so that it migrates to the area around the mouth and forms a ledge or shelf. I think in the States, I also see that the tenting technique, which involves multiple punctures perpendicularly to the lips towards the center, and you know, that in my opinion creates channels of migration for the filler to travel. And so it's not a technique that I personally would use. The technique that I developed, called the non-surgical lip lift, works with the natural anatomy of the lips. It avoids the vermilion border and works from under it, or on the lip side of the border, so that, and it also works with the tubercles so that the results look a lot more natural.
Hmm. What do you mean by avoids the vermilion border and is on the inside of the lip side?
So I mean on the soft side or the vermilion side of the border. So
in the pink. Yeah.
Yes, because as you know, the border is more a transitional zone rather than, you know, an absolute divide. And so whenever you're injecting in the border itself, in my opinion, you are going to get a degree of migration, which may not be visible, but more often than not, I think is. And that's it forms a ledge or shelf, which looks really very unnatural. It also has the effect of pulling the whole face forward, I feel, and has an aging, can have a very aging effect on the patient, because as we age, and there's a good study to show this, the face undergoes a kind of a collapse inward, a kind of internal rotation. And I think that this kind of pulling the lips forward encourages that. And so it's not something I recommend. It's a certain kind of look. You know, there are people who do this and are you know, very popular. So, but it's not something that I would do.
Yeah. When you see a patient in your clinic, which all of us now are seeing people who have had filler placed where it's migrating, what are your typical first steps? Do you immediately dissolve the filler? Do you recommend starting with fresh lips? I think that's usually the best approach.
It is often, but you know, I think the idea is to give the patient the option and say, you know, look, you could wait this out, but it could take years for it to dissolve. The filler becomes very resistant to degradation in the perioral area. And so, you know, but what happens is, especially with my technique, it actually forms a mechanical barrier. If you have filler, which is sitting there in the perioral region, it won't allow the lips to rotate upwards, which is what my technique does. And so typically I will suggest or recommend having it dissolved as well. And then if they agree, then that's what we do. And I have a dissolving clinic, which is very popular. So I'll see between, well, it's quite a lot now, up to 10 people, I would say, a week for dissolving. And then a week later, we will we'll do new treatment for a more natural result.
That's so interesting that there's such a high volume. You need to have a dissolving clinic. It's really becoming quite prevalent because people have been in the habit of layering filler upon filler every 6 months or every once a year when they don't.
So you have a buildup, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. I agree with you. I think that fillers can last very prolonged periods of time, especially infraorbital. Like I've seen them up to 5 to 7 years later in the infraorbital tear troughs. And it's just interesting that it doesn't last where you want it to last, but it lasts forever where it looks awful. So what's the theory of that? Why does that happen? Do you have any ideas?
I'm not really sure as to why that happens in some areas and not others. It seems that the filler travels superficially, and that's where maybe it becomes more resistant. But I'm not sure of what the exact reason is.
I think maybe it's like reduced lymphatic flow when it is more superficially placed and it's kind of trapped in a little pocket where there's not good arterial blood flow, not good lymphatic egress, and maybe that just allows it to indwell and integrate into the fibroblastic tissues.
Yes, that may well be the cause.
Yeah.
Yes, it's seems to hold true for some, but not for everyone. So, you know, with respect to filler in the perioral area or around the mouth, it can last anywhere from 1 to 5 years or even longer, many, many, many years. And there seems to be a lot of variation between people. But I agree with you that, you know, lymphatics or certainly the blood supply would have some sort of effect there as well, for sure.
What are the tenets of your non-surgical lip lift? So I know that you like to recreate the embryologic tubercles of the lip and accentuate perhaps the Cupid's bow and philtrum? Are there other major tenets?
In terms of the philtrum and the philtral columns, I tend not to inject them, so they would correct indirectly when I do the non-surgical lip lift. To me, when you put filler in the philtrum, it tends to protrude and looks unnatural. So the idea with lips is to restore their natural shape. And so I use three different techniques in the non-surgical lip lift. One is injection of boluses, and those would go into the little dermal projections called tubercles, those little naturally occurring pillows of the lips. From there, I would extend the filler with a strip and then also do a curved technique to bring out the curves of the lips as well. And all of this is done on the lip side of the border as opposed to in the vermilion border itself. And so what you have is the lips projecting naturally and rotating rather than projecting linearly, which is what happens when you inject the border. You literally push the lips forward rather than rotate them upwards.
I actually tend to put a little bit of philtral columns in, and very precisely placed, but I do think it shortens that lip distance, the distance from the nose to the upper lip, so they don't get long in the lip.
Certainly can, and the idea often is to shorten that the gap, the philtrum, which I think the non-surgical lip lift does really beautifully. And that's where I call it the curve thread comes in, which lifts the lip upwards and shortens it. You know, look, in some patients you may wish to inject the philtral columns. It's not something I do, but if it works for you and it looks natural, then yes, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many different ways to do lips, and so many people get beautiful results. Are you familiar, of course, with Julie Horn and how she does the vertical pillars of filler through the lips? What do you think of that technique?
Julie Horn, obviously, who's very popular in the States, I can see. And but she does, from what I can see, she does use the tenting technique, and the lips do form a kind of ledge. Now, people like that look, and that's fine, and it's a kind of style, but it's not something that I subscribe to, so it's not something that I would recommend for my patients. But you know, I suppose
there's a lip for every style. Every injector has a style and a lip, and as long as the patients are happy. But I think she does beautiful work.
That's very important. And as long as they're making, I think, reasonable requests and have, you know, and are of sound mind, shall we say.
Well, that is definitely not always the case, because I, as you do, see a fair number of people who have plenty of filler in their face, and they still come in and they still think they need filling of more lines and more invisible defects.
Yes, that's okay. And you know what? It's not only a problem with our patients, it's a problem with a lot of our practitioners who are looking increasingly fuller and fuller and dysmorphic, shall we say. And so this is a problem we have in our industry, which we really need to address. And it's something I've looked at. I did a study with a colleague of mine who's a psychiatrist, who was published a couple of years ago, where we looked at the incidence of body dysmorphic disorder amongst practitioners. And we found a higher rate of BDD than in the general patient population. Was it 16%? And in the patient population was 8 to 15%.
Wow.
So this is something that we need to address, really.
I think so. It's we've become beauty perfectionists, and we analyze ourselves as much as we analyze our patients. Can you talk a little bit about what's your process when you're first meeting a patient for the first time, in terms of how would you say you analyze a face differently than an average injector? You being an artist and someone who understands muscle modulation, what do you look for when you're deciding how to myomodulate a face?
Yeah, so for me, it's all about restoring the ideal facial shape. And of course, it's useful if a patient also comes with some photos of what they look like younger. And I know a lot of us encourage that as well, because that can certainly point you in the right direction. But, you know, artistically, I have a sense of what the ideal facial shape is for the particular patient. And that is something that we would discuss. Typically, they will come in to have an area of the face addressed, you know, like cheeks, the lips, or the chin, or a little bit of Botox. But I think it's very important that we educate our patients to get them to see things holistically, because, you know, we're made of the sum of all the parts, not just each one individually. And I think if you treat an area in isolation, then you immediately get a mismatch. And you can see that in a lot of patients who've had been having Botox for, you know, on the upper third of their face for many, many years, but have not addressed, you know, the lower face or the mid face with fillers. And so there ends up being that mismatch, and there's a kind of done look which we want, because we want to keep our patients looking as natural as possible, and many of them want to as well, even though there is a growing trend these days to look unnatural. But for the majority, we want to keep them looking natural.
Very true. You're an artist, I understand, and you're derived from a father who's an inventor, a mother who's an artist. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Oh, you did some research. Yes.
Yes, of course I read about you. And I love some of your sketch work. So I think that that's such an integral part of our field, to be able to analyze facial proportions and understand what makes a face look more youthful and prettier.
I think that's incredibly important. And one thing that I would encourage practitioners to do, especially those who are starting out, is to draw, because I think you gain a kind of appreciation for natural beauty, a kind of intimate appreciation when you're actually drawing things out or drawing a portrait, which is something I do regularly. And I encourage that in others. But certainly, yes, we have to study proportions of the face and the normal ranges of things, so that we don't, you know, make patients look abnormal as such. We want to keep, we, I always say, normalization before beautification. We have to keep results normal. That should really, and especially these days, be our priority.
That doesn't sell. That's not sexy enough. You have to.
Well, yeah, okay. I suppose there's that side, and particularly when it comes to lips, there is this trend of patients wanting bigger and bigger lips. But, you know, look, it's up to us to, I think, educate them as much as possible. You know, because there is this danger of, you know, of sort of continuing along this path, which I feel can be quite an unhealthy one psychologically, and it also encourages, you know, I think, or can potentially damage psychological health in encouraging image or catering to image disorders such as body dysmorphic disorder, which is very common among young patients. So I think we really need to look at it from a health point of view and establish normality, because that is the right thing to do in terms of health. And we have a duty of care to our patients and a responsibility. So, you know, I think we have to take all that into consideration.
It's true. It's a difficult job. You have to be an artist, but you also have to adjudicate beauty, which is You know, there's a line where my feeling of what's beautiful shouldn't be superimposed on your face and your desires of what you think is beautiful, because beauty is open to personal interpretation. So I definitely allow my patients to walk that line. But I also see, like you say, that there's societal morphing of standards of what is normal. Because you talk about, let's make everybody think about attaining normal. But now people take their phone out and show me, I want these lips of this Instagram model because she looks so natural. And I say, well, that girl has 2 to 3 syringes in her lips already. And that is looking very pretty and she looks kind of natural, but that's got filler. 2 syringes in lips is a lot. So the new norm really is like what people are seeing in every lip. It's like the new norm in LA. We've all had Botox. If you don't have Botox, you look weird.
Yeah. No, you're right. And especially on social media, you know, this kind of exaggerated look and overdoing things and this whole more is more approach. I'm fighting it because I really think we need to change this, because I think it is unhealthy and has consequences, because we're catering to mental health disorders such as image disorders and body dysmorphic disorder, you know, which is very common amongst our young patients in particular. And so we have, you know, we have a duty of care and responsibility to stop this kind of more is more approach and take a step back, really.
I think it's so true, especially in teens and adolescents and 20-year-olds who already lack self-esteem and they judge themselves by such high standards of beauty, and to see this unattainable sort of perfect Instagram photoshopped version of beauty is really affecting their psyche. Like, they can't go out of the house unless they're fully made up, and they don't understand that every beautiful model comes in here looking like a normal girl. But it's even affecting like the very average 40-year-old teacher who comes to see me, who opens her phone and is like, I want these natural, normal looking lips. And no, those have 2 syringes already. That's not natural. That's right, enhanced.
Right. And so then I think it's really up to us to educate patients with respect to what is normal. And I will regularly send patients away if you know, if they're asking me for outlandish things or you know, more and more. I try my best to you know, educate them and discourage them. But if they're insistent, then I just refer them on.
Sometimes have patients who are underwhelmed by the result of one syringe, 2 syringes applied so judiciously and so thoughtfully, but they don't see very much dramatic effect and they're like, you know, underwhelmed?
I think that's a very good question. The type of patient who comes to me knows that they're going to look natural. So if they want these huge, massive lips, they usually will not come to me. They'll go to a road in a street in London where they'll go, that sort of all that kind of stuff is done there. And I focus a lot on patient education and set expectations up from the moment go so that they know what to expect. So very early on, if we're not suitable for each other, that will, you know, that will be immediately apparent.
What do you say to your critics of myomodulation who say that a soft gel hyaluronic filler cannot withhold muscle forces and does not sustain its lift potential for more than a few months?
So I would agree with them if they're thinking about it in a particular way. So the person who first looked at myomodulation in the face is Maurizio Di Maio, and he's the inventor of the MD codes.
Yeah, very well known. Yes.
Yeah. So, and he's an excellent injector, but his theory of how myomodulation works is a pulley effect, kind of where you place the filler under a muscle, and then it over time the muscles elongate, so this resets its ideal resting length so that it can pull better. And what you're saying is right, and that was my objection to it or doubt about it, that you can't take a soft gel and expect to, you know, reposition soft tissues or muscles. I mean, you would know, you probably have enough of a difficult time doing that during surgery. How's a little bit of gel going to, you know, pull a muscle right up there? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And so that's why when I discovered or found out that they had discovered these mechanoreceptors, these sensory receptors in muscles, then from that point of view, it makes sense, because when you're stimulating or when you're involving the autonomic nervous system, then you get more of an elevator effect over a sympathetic depressor effect. And from that point of view, it does make more sense. So I would urge people to have a look at my mechanoreceptor filler hypothesis. There's, you know, various articles online, and they can see on my Instagram, because to me that explains how muscles can lift and do lift with a soft gel.
How long do you think that resultant improved emotional expression lasts? Because I definitely would agree, like, even after I get filler for my own face, I feel the perception of after the bruising goes away, I look great for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and then, you know, it diminishes. So it's something, I would say it's one of our goals to maintain it for long periods of time. I'd love a patient to get a effect like that would last for 6 to 12 months.
Yes, I'm finding that when the filler is positioned or placed correctly, that the emotional benefits or appearance can last the duration of the filler. Now, look, this is just my experience, and I think it needs to be subjected to proper trials. And hopefully these will be done very soon. I'm in touch with a few people who are, and we've been talking about how we can show or how we can investigate this. And so stay tuned for that. But there is certainly, shall we say, the potential for the effects to be long lasting with this less is more approach, so that we don't need to use fillers as volumizers to replace lost fat, which is what everyone is obsessed with. But instead, we can peripherally place the fillers to have an outward kind of, to pull out and to encourage the muscles to lift for a facial reshaping effect.
Well, that was a very interesting, tantalizing fact. So who are you going to be doing studies with? And are we going to see like EMG studies where we see muscle contraction forces changing?
Yes. So I won't say too much as yet, because it's just starting phase. But the discussion is around superficially placed EMG measures. So that's what we would be looking at. So actually measuring the muscle activity. Now, how much will I be involved in that research? Well, we're still discussing it, and we're seeing how to move forward. So it's still very, very early stages. But as usual, I'll post on Instagram the moment I have any news.
Yeah. Instagram and Twitter and everything, they've been so useful during quarantine for us to communicate, like, with new theories, not just aesthetic theories, of course, but COVID theories. But it's really a great mechanism to communicate, I think. I love to use calcium hydroxyapatite in deeper, thicker level fillers that do mimic bone, you know, like radius, which I place for lateral contouring, just as you're speaking of, to build a fulcrum effect where we have bone changes and osteoporosis and bone density changes in the mandible and the jawline. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting approach. What's your thought on those type of fillers and changing at the bone level, because actually much of aging is involving the skeletal framework too.
Correct. And so the fillers that I use, I place on all the injections on the periphery pretty much are periosteal. And so they go deep on the bone, as you say, to build up the skeleton. But I try to position them also at the origin, let's say, of the elevator muscles, such as, let's say, your zygomaticus major, to encourage the process of myomodulation at the same time. So you're reshaping and, as you say, myomodulating. I like that term. Mm-hmm. At the same time. Now, yes, you can have different fillers to do that, and I suppose you use the filler that or fillers which you feel most comfortable with. For me, it's more Juvederm Voluma, but yes, I've seen you using your fillers like Radiesse, and you know, I think you have some wonderful results too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about replacing bone density change as a first layer, because certainly your muscles will have changes in thinning and stretching, but that also begins from their attachment, which is on periosteum. So I think, you know, for me, when I see women with lower face changes, I always feel like it's related to the dentition, and very often changes in the lips have to do with changes of the gingiva and the teeth and the canine teeth receding. So there's so much that we need to do to replace bone. I think in the future we should have bone stimulation versus like filling. Wouldn't that be nice?
I think that's an excellent idea.
Something we can work on. Well, I would encourage you to try those calcium hydroxyapatite. I'm sure you have, but it's one of those things that's not reversible, so people tend to not jump on that bandwagon. But your knowledge of anatomy and your knowledge of muscle attachments and vasculature, you probably would love it. I also think that, like you said, these studies are very difficult because some people have criticized that, like the after picture where the person's myomodulated, that they have a little smile or a little twinkle. Like, it's hard to control their emotion because someone does.
Yeah, you know, that's very difficult. And with my befores and afters, I really go out of my way to ensure that the conditions are as close as possible, you know, in terms of lighting, in terms of sort of expression or, you know, ensuring that the patient isn't smiling. In other words, doing a normal expression. But you're right. There is always that going to be that variable which one needs to think about. But all we can do is really do the best. Well, really do the best that we can. Be honest and real about it. And of course, investigate it further, which is hopefully what will be taking place now.
For sure. What do you think is the most undertreated area of the face in terms of injectables? Like, what do we routinely forget to think about, or you see it undertreated in women on the street?
That's an excellent question. You know, these days, pretty much everything is being treated on the face.
I was going to say temples. I feel like the temples are quite neglected.
I think that as when we're youthful, our head is round as a volleyball or a basketball. And when we look at young people, the convexity of the forehead and the temples, it really does make them look youthful. And as we age, we lose so much. That's really like the anchoring point of the cheeks is the temples.
That's correct. And you're so right about that. There's been such an over-focus on the mid-face and again, replacing fat and building up the cheeks that of course, then the temples look even more hollow and that distorts the shape of the face. So I would tend to agree with you about that. Certainly when you're doing facial reshaping, however, or looking at for the ideal facial shape, and the temple would never be something that you would leave out. So you see, because it's on the periphery and you ensure that it does flow with the forehead and there's that nice transition between the forehead and cheek. But that is an area I agree with you, which is often neglected and needs more attention, especially now with some studies showing that superficial injections behind the hairline on the temple actually does have some of a lifting effect. And there's a study to show injecting up to a mil behind the hairline here can actually lift and define the jawline. And that's a study by Professor Kofitana, who's absolutely brilliant.
I love his anatomy work. He's amazing. Yeah, I've seen studies that show that with fat transfer to temples, it can take up to 10 cc's of fat on each side to have to fill the entire cavity, which is a significant amount. And certainly as we age, the temporalis muscles and everything else atrophies. Do you ever think about how chronic use of neurotoxins is making us have very thin, flaccid musculature of the face, upper face?
You mean like from a muscle atrophy? Or?
Yeah, from long-term Botoxing of the forehead. And
yeah, I think the muscles sorry.
I was going to say, I think about that all the time, because even on myself, I don't want to become a thin skin, shiny forehead, no muscle person.
And you do see it in patients, don't you? Particularly after many years. Yes. So, you know, it's not only with fillers that we have to be careful and judicial, but it's with Botox as well. I think we're over Botoxing patients. And so I think we need to take a step back there as well. But I agree with you. It's a problem.
Well, quarantine has certainly helped all of us take a step back. What will you be doing differently? None of us have injected for almost 2 months now. So what will you do differently when you start seeing patients in terms of precautions or thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm doing what most other people are doing. So, you know, cutting down the lists, allowing more time per patient and in between patients. Obviously what we're introducing is as soon as the patient comes in is a temperature reading and disinfecting hands, and I'll be wearing a gown, gloves and the mask as well. You know, obviously if they have symptoms, then cancel your appointment. And there's been this whole debate about, you know, whether we should just be injecting toxin to begin with and then gradually introducing fillers and getting back to lips slowly. But you know, I'm going to do both, but just with extra time in between patients, really. So cutting my lists down to half what I would normally see per day, that kind of thing. What about you?
The same, an N95 mask, probably a facial shield. I will have the patient wear a mask. I've debated maybe not doing lips for the first 2 or 3 weeks. I've also thought about doing the betadine or iodine rinsing as a virus killing measure. So some people talk about dilute bleach or peroxide gargle, or betadine diluted to gargle, which would be highly effective. And then some people have talked about having patients do that at home before they even come, and then do it again in the office with a peroxide gargle. So I think that's all reasonable. I do rhinoplasty surgery, so I'm nervous to do that and probably won't do it for another 2 months. I don't see the need to jump right back in with that. But
look, I mean, you know, it's things aren't going to be the same, are they? And until such time that we find a vaccine, and so we really need to adapt to this. But I think we'll be okay. And I think as long as our patients understand, and they'll need to understand and be patient, because they're, you know, everyone's. I mean, we've already had this kind of rush, you know, towards doing things, and then, you know, they'll want everything done, and we have to take a step back you know, work through this together.
Do you think anybody will be more prone to granuloma formation with filler, or if they come down with COVID after having had filler freshly?
Yeah. I don't know of any conclusive evidence for that. But certainly something we should watch out for, I would say, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's a brave new world we're going into.
Yes.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. And I love all of your theories on myomodulation. I think it's something we all see when we inject faces. Not just that we're adding volume. It's something changes and enhanced, whether it's enhanced confidence or something with the muscles lifting. It's going to be amazingly interesting to see you quantify that. And
thank you.
Yeah, I invite you to come visit me in Los Angeles.
Anytime. I will one day. I will. I hope to make it to that part of the world one day.
Yeah, you're definitely invited. I teach a Mastery of Aesthetics course 2 times a year, and this year it got side-railed, so we might do it virtually, but I'd love to have you talk about your techniques. And
yes, I'd be delighted to. Thank you very much.
Theories. Well, it's so wonderful to have you. Where can all of our listeners find you on your various handles?
So basically the main part is Instagram at Dr. Harris Clinic, where I post regularly and engage my audience. And also on Facebook at Dr. Harris Clinic. Those are my main sort of ports.
And your website, of course, too, which is...
And my website, which is harrisclinic.co.uk. And yes, also, I, you know, if you ever come, if you, I'm speaking to you, if you ever come visit or the UK, please make sure you get in touch.
I definitely will. I was supposed to come for a London FACE meeting and it just didn't happen.
Oh, well, they've rescheduled FACE. I'm actually going to be giving a talk there. So, but I don't know if you'd be able to think about flying out, you know.
I don't think we'll fly for 6 more months, like international flights, probably.
Maybe till the end of the year kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I hope you stay so safe and continue to beautify and do all of your amazing work.
Thank you, and you too.
And don't forget, everybody, to tune into Dr. Harris's Instagram, learn about myomodulation, and you can find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces at Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, and our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. And that's it for now, everybody. Stay beautiful.